Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 26th of August. This hour of the program, we will start with a member of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's watchdog team. The newspaper on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and also today has been doing thorough investigations of substantial problems at the Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex. On January 19, a team of federal inspectors arrived at the Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex unannounced to go through the patient files of Ward 43D. The article says they found conditions there to be so dangerous and oversight so lax that after just 2 days, they declared the hospital to be unsafe. The article goes on to talk about a number of cases. A woman who was pregnant had been impregnated probably by a gentleman with a history of sexual violence who had viciously sexually assaulted patients and then impregnated one of them. We'll look at the management of this facility and why it is that the least vulnerable, the most vulnerable among us are not very protected, and why it is that they are not accredited. The process has now been put in motion, but what it takes to be accredited and whether or not that is important. The county let its accreditation lapse in 2003, Meg writes, to save money and because officials feared they wouldn't pass the accepted standards. This complex is only one of seven large psychiatric hospitals, the only one that is lacking accreditation here in the state of Wisconsin. It's a very moving story. Meg is a terrific reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She has won a number of awards. She is the investigative reporter on the paper focusing on health and welfare issues. She has won awards, that great series that she did on bisphenol A, or bisphenol A, however you pronounce it, and the lack of government action to keep the public safe. She has won awards for reports on filthy and dangerous housing conditions in Milwaukee County for people with mental illness. The series won the Mental Health America Award for Best News Reporting. She has done other reports on the scam of the door-to-door magazine sales industry and the travails of an oncologist who unwittingly discovered his own end-stage cancer. She's been with the paper for a number of years, since 19... Well, we'll ask her how long. Before that, she was at a paper in New York and also at the Cincinnati Post before coming to Milwaukee, here we go, in 1983 as the legal affairs reporter. We will be speaking with Meg the first half hour of our program, and the second half hour, the executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Greater Milwaukee. Obviously, mental illness affects a number of people, and there are a number of people who are treated successfully at the Milwaukee County Health Complex, but these kinds of stories are stories that just probably shouldn't exist. We'll be welcoming phone calls. We have calls coming in already. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Good morning, Meg.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Congratulations on a very well done article and something that we should know about and we didn't. Why don't you start with this dramatic story? It was in Sunday's paper of the baby no one wants to talk about.
A baby was born April 29th at Frederick Hospital here in Milwaukee, and this is the story of a woman who came to the mental health complex last in July of 2009, and she came from a group home where she had been expelled for violence against her roommates, and she was on. She has a medical guardian. She has been diagnosed with mental retardation and substantial mental illness. And her chart notes that she should be on birth control injections because one of her manifestations of her illness is that she has doesn't have boundaries. So anyway, she was on orders for those injections and clearly did not get them because, as it was learned in September, mid-September, she was pregnant. And by all accounts, she had been having regular sex with one of her fellow patients on Ward 43D at the mental health complex. So this is a story of, you know, how this baby came to be and the mismanagement of this case.
Mm-hmm. And you spent a lot of time, including an article today, talking about the gentleman with whom she had sex, who also had a history of violent assault at the mental health complex, and they were on the same ward.
That's right. Amawali Atkins, who really has lived at the mental health complex since he was 13 years old.
Oh, my.
And he has his own tragic story. He was born to a mother who was addicted to cocaine. He was born with fetal alcohol syndrome, a hole in his skull that had to be closed surgically when he was six, and a shunt put in. And he had behavior problems all throughout. And finally, when he was 13, he just became effectively a ward of the county and went from one detention home to another. And on his 18th birthday, was transferred to the mental health complex, where he got into trouble often and with substantial violence, beating patients, nurses, sexually assaulting other patients. So just a tragic situation. And I think one of the more alarming errors in this case was that he and this woman would be put in such proximity to one another.
Mm-hmm. Also, The Guardian was not told about the sex violation of the policy of the hospital. What is the hospital policy on sex among people who are there?
Well, it changed a little bit. As it was written then, it is that sex between patients is counterindicated. It's not therapeutically appropriate. Since then, it's been honed. It's now outright prohibited.
Mm.
But that's where the confusion, some of the confusion lay, was that staff reported to inspectors who ultimately went in there in January, as you just recounted, and staff has said that they weren't really clear of the hospital policy. And so how could they be expected to enforce what they don't know?
So she is being given, back to the woman, is being given medication, heavy-duty medication, and she is pregnant.
Right. And this is, it was kind of like peeling back an onion. You know, every layer just told a little bit more about this story, but it was hard to put it all together. But The bottom line here is that, yeah, she was, I think what is the most concerning is that she was pregnant for many weeks taking very heavy-duty psychotropic medications that are, three of whom are counter, they say, the warnings on the labels, do not take if you're pregnant. So when she first reported that she and Amawali Atkins had been sexually active, that was in July, really, by policy, she should have been checked for a number of things, HIV, venereal disease, and pregnancy. Whether she was or not isn't clear, but what is known is that a pregnancy test on September 14th showed her to be pregnant. She didn't start receiving prenatal care until October.
Hmm. So. You... the private attorney, now we've got the county really spending a whole lot of money, certainly to hospitalize her, because, and then the cost of the birth. The county has now hired a public relations person at quite some expense, and this whole process has cost them a lot of money. You were also, I guess, county mental health administrators had sent emails, is this right, to all employees warning them not to speak with you about this?
Right. This is a story that they really don't want told.
I'm sure.
And it's a very disturbing story. And as we called around more and tried to get the full story on this, in talking with nurses who work there, hospital administrators, current and former. The door started slamming, and they did send an email to all employees warning them, do not speak with the Journal Sentinel.
Mm-hmm. The private attorney who's now handling this, interesting, they've gone to a private attorney, said, we wish that we could encourage you, meaning you, Meg, to contact the thousands of patients successfully served by our county over the years.
Right. Well, no doubt people have gotten help at the Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex, and no doubt there are good-hearted, excellent staff there, and that is great, and that is as expected, and that's what you want, and that's that's the expectation. But clearly, there are mistakes being made, and there were corners cut, and there are problems there, systemic. And this didn't happen in a vacuum. This happened, after a number of decisions were made to cut staff, et cetera. It's not as simple as cutting staff, but a lack of training. We go into a litany of that in the story or in the whole series. It's a very complex issue. And from my way of thinking, the more light shined on this, the more likely more effective care will be given. So, yeah, the background on the private attorney, Mark Camelli, he was hired in 2006. I wrote a story about a woman by the name of Cindy Anzac who died of complications of starvation while at the mental health.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Which is almost impossible to think of in the year 2006. Mm. But anyway, she did. And the fallout from that was enormous, and the county anticipated that there would be a lawsuit and that it would be very costly. And so they hired Mark Camelli for his expertise. He'd been a prosecutor. And so that's probably the fiscally responsible thing to do, to gird your loins or, get a good defense going. But they kept him on. He has remained of counsel to the county all the while. Now the state, in that case, the State Department of Justice opened a criminal investigation after that story appeared. They closed that investigation last October, but Mark Camelli remains working for the county, and that the rate of $395 an hour is an eye opener. It's what good lawyers get paid.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about this process of accreditation. You write that the county let its accreditation lapse in 2003 to save money and because officials feared they wouldn't pass the accepted standards. It's the only complex of seven large psychiatric hospitals in Wisconsin that's lacking accreditation.
Right. This is a classic case of short-sightedness. So, and I'm told that decision was made by former administrators. Paula Lucy was one. Kathy Eilers, who was the director at the mental health complex, who has retired since. And Jim Hill, who was the also the director of the behavioral health division. Those decisions were made at the time. And as they explain it, and it sounds logical to me as well, that the standards are very exacting. So a lot of attention to very minute detail, the size of the doors, the window, locks on the windows, lots of very particular qualifications. But it also included a good deal of training. And the county faced with budget woes, was looking to save money. It's expensive to belong, to have accreditation, and it's expensive to adhere to the standards that they require. So the decision was made then to drop that. They've now decided that was not a good decision.
I would imagine they've decided that, Meg.
Right.
Yeah, after this article, they're going to be spending a lot more money, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Well, other hospitals did this. They're the only one in the state that didn't do this?
That's what we're told. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. And you've had reports. Now, the county executive has said that he's going to put together a task force to look at this issue, that money will be spent. What's been the response to this article? Or these articles? There are many of them.
Well, the response from the public is of outrage. Mm-hmm. And I always take a deep breath as I write these articles about folks with mental illness, because it is difficult to get people to care. I know there's a lot of stigma attached to people with chronic mental illness, and this is a tough population to write about. But it's a very important one. So the response to the articles has been of outrage, on a number of levels. The county's very guarded. We have yet to hear from John Cianelli, the director of Behavioral Health Division, or others. Scott Walker released a statement, and as you noted, he said that he appointed this task force in the spring, and it was in response to when the stories came out about the federal inspection. And then the Disability Rights Wisconsin, which is a watchdog group, an advocacy group for people with mental illness, they have their own investigation going. And Scott tapped Paula Lucy, former administrator, and Barbara Beckert, the head of Disability Rights Wisconsin, to head that task force. And they're, from what I've seen, I've attended a meeting, they're doing a very thorough job of looking into patient safety.
We welcome phone calls for Meg. Meg Kissinger is our guest, the first part of the program. She has written a very important series starting on Monday, or Sunday actually, in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on the Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex. It's home, as she writes, to some of the most vulnerable people in the county, those found to be dangerous to themselves or others, and who are being kept behind locked doors under the care of taxpayer-financed doctors and nurses. But unfortunately, some of the people are not being kept safe, and there seems to be problems with not everybody there, of course. I'm sure there are wonderful people, as there are everywhere, who are doing work that's difficult and requires great skill. But there are also people who don't have backgrounds in what they need to have backgrounds in order to administer good care to people. And there are real questions about some of the decisions that have been made that have allowed some of the dramatic stories to develop that you just heard Meg outline. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program this Wednesday, Bill Nye, the science guy, will join us. Let's go to Mike from Milwaukee for our first call, Meg. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Kathleen, I've talked to Meg before. Hi, Meg.
Hi.
I talked to you. There was a death of a child in foster care about a year ago, maybe. There was an article, I think, that you had done about that. There's cuts that are being done in foster care to save money. There's cuts in elder care for in-home care, and it's making it more and more difficult for the elderly to get care and attention. This is just another situation where especially the gubernatorial candidate, Scott Walker, has made cuts and doesn't care about the safety and the lives of for a party that's so pro-life. They don't give a damn about the least protected and the most vulnerable in society. Their main interest is cutting. And Meg, with all respect to your reporting capabilities, you refuse, and the Milwaukee Journal refuses to get political about this. The Republican Party is it's just like Grover Norquist. We're going to drown the baby in the bathwater.
Okay, your phone is kind of cutting out here. You have said that you said earlier that it's not entirely a matter of budget here, but of course the article indicates that budget is one of the things going on.
Right. There's been some cutback in staff, and there was an effort. The county executive did suggest cutting 50 direct service jobs earlier this year, and that move was blocked by the county board. Scott Walker will note that there has been an increase in spending for mental health care in Milwaukee County, which is true. It didn't keep pace, though, with the rising health care costs.
What about the people, the mismanagement here? Is there a problem in the complex with the people who are in charge of organizing the place, of running the place? Do they have degrees which may be necessary in running these kinds of facilities?
Well, if the question comes up, you know, should the director of behavioral health division be a medical doctor? Previously, that was the case. That hasn't been so in the last couple of administrators. The current administrator, John Cianelli, is an occupational therapist. He has a graduate degree in health care administration. And prior to him, Jim Hill was a he had been with the county. He at one point was with the sewerage district. He was more of a career government employee. And so should the person in charge have a more appropriate education background? And that's a question to consider. I think what comes away from this story is clearer guidelines on patient management, better training of the staff. There was both an intensive care ward and a secure care ward, and I'm told that the secure care ward was for people like Amawali Atkins who are facing criminal charges, and so there's a more intense scrutiny or coverage of those patients, and that was done away with several years ago. I don't know if that was a budget-cutting measure or what, but it was. That's how it was explained to us. Steve Schultz, I need to add that Steve Schultz is the co-author of the series, and he covers county government, and it was a fantastic partner in this effort. So Steve did a lot of the part of the story that involves the budget, the county budget issues. So to answer the question, there were a lot of decisions made, a lot of administrative decisions made that have now been called into question.
And did you have to get to Mike's point here? This is a political year, of course, and the county executive is running for governor. You had to have that somewhere in your mind as you were writing this piece.
You know, we tried to stay well clear of that.
I think you were successful, but...
Because, frankly, to me, the care of people with mental illness or developmental disabilities transcends politics. And I don't care what political party you're with. I mean, the measure of a society is how well we treat the least among us. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean the least among us in a pejorative
right.
way, but those who are in greatest need of care. And so we are not naive. I mean, we know that this is an election year, and Scott Walker is the executive, and he's also running for governor. But we really made a strong effort to stay well clear of that.
Yeah, and I think you were very successful in doing that, that it was difficult to do that. Mel is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Mel.
Hi. Well, first, the last part of my comment was going to be that Scott Walker, of course, is one of the people who's been cutting from there. So I'll get that out of the way. But I would think better than hiring an attorney for some, ungodly price and then public relations firm to take care of
the
mess.
Well, it's not a public relations firm. This is Kim Brooks, who is a county employee. She worked for the sheriff's department, and now her duties are to, they call her, she's a community liaison, but the effect is the same. So it's not a public relations firm.
Okay. But better to spend that money on training people and on fixing the problem, maybe taking the accreditation notes and requirements and not go for accreditation, but look at the things that aren't widening the doors and new locks and on what is needed in a staff and put that money into that. And one more thing, you said something about safety, and I have a friend who had worked as a mental health nurse there for years. She's been retired a few years, but the safety of the of the staff is also a big concern. I can remember her telling me stories about being picked up and slammed to the ground.
Oh, absolutely.
So and the Nurses Union will tell you they keep records on patient safety or staff safety, and they are encouraged to file complaints at the end of their shifts, and those have increased. That's in our story somewhere. It's some outrageous increase just in the last year.
Now, a lot more is going to come out because Atkins, as you write today, I believe, mm-hmm. has been found competent to stand trial.
That's right. So he will, this is in regard to a sexual assault last summer on Ward 43D. This is not the sex with the woman who had the baby. This is another woman also on that same ward who reports that Amawali Atkins attacked her last August 30th, and he's charged with two counts of sexual assault in that case, one of them being second degree and third degree, and included in that charge is having sex with a person known to have a mental illness. So that case will now proceed to trial. Previously, he was charged in that last September, sent back to Mendota. It was determined that he was not competent to face those charges, and that decision was renewed last April, and now yesterday, Kevin Martin, Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge, found that indeed he is competent to. The litmus test there is, can you provide substantial assistance for your legal counsel? And it was determined that he can.
Mm-hmm. When you talked to, and I know you talked to many, many, many people for this series, what did those who seem to know the most about this situation say is the best way to give treatment and to house somebody like Atkins and to house people who have substantial mental illness and perhaps some developmental delays that are serious as well. Do we know, is there a standard for this so violence won't happen?
Well, Kathleen, that is the best question of all. And that's where the answer to all of this lies. And I don't think that is, we figured that out yet. There are, and actually, stay tuned because that's what we're going to be writing about next is, How do other cities, other areas deal with this? Because somebody's got to be doing it better than the way we're doing it, and that is it's expensive, it's labor intensive. You're talking mm-hmm. about one-on-one coverage mm-hmm. of some of these patients have very bizarre, disturbing, dangerous behavior. So the way that it was that these patients were supervised previously is clearly not the way to do it. There were, when the federal inspectors went in January and reviewed the patient records from Ward 43D last summer, they found that 11 of 17 patients had inappropriate sexual contact.
Oh, my. Let's take another call for you. Judy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Yes. Is any consideration being given to filing criminal charges against the administrators of the mental health complex for their choices of not being accredited and following the normal rules of mental health facilities and of not protecting the patients they were supposed to protect by not having sufficient staff and training?
Well, criminal charges would come from the district attorney's office, and I think that would be a tall order. I'm not sure that is going to happen. I wouldn't expect that would happen.
Hmm. The editorial, though, in yesterday's Journal Sentinel did say that as a result of your investigation, heads need to roll.
Right. And, we keep a thick wall. I'm glad of it sometimes because, I know John Cianelli a little bit. He's a very nice man. And people have, when he came onto the hot seat last spring after we published a story about some remarks he made in a closed-door session to some county board members about the need, they were discussing should they have mixed gender wards or same-sex wards? And John Cinelli was quoted as telling the county board members that the presence of women on the wards tends to calm down the men. And you can imagine the brouhaha that followed that. And I'm told that he's just a very able, nice man. But anyway, that's our editorial call for heads to roll. We haven't even talked about Carl Strelnick, who is a psychiatrist at the mental health complex Hilltop Unit. And it was Dr. Strelnick who supervised the case of the woman who became pregnant. He was not her supervising psychiatrist at the time she became pregnant, but she transferred to that unit in September, and it was there that there was a delay of some weeks between when the county knew of her pregnancy and when her guardian was informed. Well, Dr. Strelnick was also the psychiatrist in the case involving Cindy Anzik, the woman who died of complications of starvation. And as we report, he had lost his license back in the late 80s. He surrendered his license after admitting to having sex with two of his patients, one as many as 100 times.
Ooh.
So why is Dr. Strelnick employed by Milwaukee County as a psychiatrist? I think that's a very legitimate question to ask.
Yeah. Meg, thank you so much for your really great, great reporting. I'm sure it's hard to do these kinds of stories, but they are important, and we'll look forward to how you carry on with them.
Great. Thanks, Kathleen. I appreciate it.
Meg Kissinger, investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The series starts on Sunday. In case you haven't been able to keep up with these, you can get them online as well. And it looks at substantial problems at the Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex. Joining us for the remainder of the program is the executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness for Greater Milwaukee. Peter Hofel will be with us, and we'll continue taking phone calls. He obviously has read the series and will have comments about what needs to happen to make sure that the most vulnerable among us are taken care of and are not a threat to themselves and to other people. There seems to be a failure in that regard, as this story would indicate. Our phone number continuing to be 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And Peter is with us momentarily on the Ideas Network. Peter is joining us now. Hello, Peter. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning, Kathleen.
Hello. What's your overall take on the series that the Journal Sentinel has been running? Is it alarming? Is it something that needs to happen to improve conditions?
Well, I think it's clearly alarming, and there's incidents that the reports have, you know, brought to light that, you know, they should, you know, get credit for bringing these issues to light that are, you know, egregious and not acceptable by any stretch of any imagination for healthcare, you know, be it mental health or any other health. It's good that light is coming to this, and I think that, with a lot of, you know, newspaper stories, you know, and it was touched on when you were talking to Meg, and also, you know, they can't interview all the people that have received exceptional care, but, you know, you never see in newspapers the thousands of airplanes that landed successfully every day. You know, when an airplane crashes, that's the story that gets coverage because it attracts attention, and it's important, and it leads to, you know, changes to be made to some of airline policy. So I think it's important that these stories are covered, very important. It's somewhat, you know, the way that it is reported, you know, there's a lot of stigmatizing language in the stories that, you know, I think, you know, leads to people not wanting to seek treatment and people not wanting to be, you know, associated with receiving mental health treatment. That remains a concern of the National Alliance on Mental Illness and other mental health advocates.
You felt that people who have mental illness were stigmatized in the article?
Oh, I do believe so. I mean, I know the article's intention is to, increase better care, you know, and to make sure that things like that have been reported on, you know, the alleged sexual abuse and, the pregnancy, these things, and also the violations. I mean, it's very important that these things get out there. But, you know, there's, you know, a lot of use of, you know, dangerous and housing dangerous people, and you know, when it comes down, you know, statistically, people with mental illness are more oftentimes victims of violent crimes than they are perpetrators of it. And you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't get that message from this series of articles. And I understand that that's not the issue with these articles, but whenever something like this is reported on, there's a lot of, you know, buzz phrase that re-stigmatize mental illnesses that affect, you know, one in four individuals throughout their life. And, you know, you don't want to be associated with being dangerous and being violent. And that's the, you know, the minority of people with mental illness.
Hmm. Well, that just shows our ignorance about people with mental illness then, doesn't it?
Right. I mean, it's an issue that, you know, NAMI and other organizations have been working on forever, is to try to, you know, get people to realize that mental illnesses are medical conditions that, you know, are illnesses of the brain. And, you know, unfortunately, the symptoms are behavioral. And so when somebody with mental illness behavior leads to something that is egregious, that's what we start looking at as mental illnesses, these, you know, unacceptable behaviors. But there's a lot of people that live with their illness that get, you know, treatment early and get detection because, you know, of a loved one or care around them, that the support was there for early diagnosis and early treatment. And, you know, in a case like, you know, it sounds, you know, in this individual Atkins, I don't know how much there was a full support and quality treatment from, you know, early on. And it, you know, the article, and Meg touched on that a little bit, that he was an individual that was, you know, the system was bouncing around and over again. And I think there needs to be a look at the larger system of mental health care. And there is a lot of that going on. I mean, it's obviously too late to prevent some of these things, but there's groups that are trying to increase the quality of care for people with mental illness throughout our whole care system, not just the county. You know, there's a lot of, you know, we need more community mental health services. We need for private hospitals to have more capacity to serve individuals with mental illness. We need, you know, a lot more early diagnosis and prevention. So mm-hmm. There's a lot of issues going on here. It's these issues, though, in these articles, you know, it needs to come up because there needs to be action and people need to be held accountable for, you know, obviously they need to be accredited. It's great that this community advisory board's been appointed. You know, Disability Rights Wisconsin has some recommendations, and there's also right now currently a state mental health and substance abuse infrastructure study that's going on that hopefully will come out with some other recommendations, as well as an adult mental health redesign that's been started. You know, and this, both of those initiatives were started prior to these stories coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate that, you know, we couldn't prevent things like this, but, you know, there's a lot of people in a lot of organizations, you know, coming together and have been together, you know, to try to prevent this type of thing.
Peter, do you have any idea, and it just strikes me as unusual, that Milwaukee County is the only large psychiatric facility in the whole state that is not accredited. I don't understand why that's the case. And would you agree right. That maybe some of these rules are just, you know, the door size and the frames and everything are too much, and that's not the reason? But why wouldn't it be?
Right. I mean, again, I think they need to be accredited. I think, you know, not getting the accreditation and letting it lapse was, you know, clearly, in retrospect, you know, something that shouldn't have been done. But there is the issue of, you know, how when you're worried about the budget, and there are things like the size of windows and doors and stuff like that, when we've repeatedly had cuts to our mental health system through the county, that they were put in situations where they had to, you know, take risks in cutting out programs that were, you know, due to a limited budget. And I think if people, you know, the average reader of the Journal and Sentinel, you know, Journal Sentinel knew how important it is to have funding for, you know, mental health services throughout our community, you know, maybe there would be a lot more public support for our tax dollars to pay for more county services.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls for you. James from Oshkosh. Hi, James.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I was listening with great interest to your program today, and I know it deals mostly with Milwaukee County, but I'd just like to throw in some stuff. First of all, I'm an educated man, and I've worked for the state for over 30 years. And I'm not saying this to be facetious or funny or, you know, critical, but when you're dealing with mental health facilities, I've been in lots of nursing homes, and the care is very slipshod. You don't begin to hear what goes on in those places. That's covered up because most of them are for profit, even the ones that say they're nonprofit. People are making money there. When somebody's elderly and if they have a mental illness, the best place for them is a prison, is in the Wisconsin state prison system. You have 24-hour monitoring that really means something. You have on-call health service, if not on-site. The federal government has suggested the state of Wisconsin go to 24-hour health service in its institutions because of things that happened with the mentally ill at the Cheetah Correctional Institution. The Department of Corrections has been avoiding it, stonewalling it, delaying it to a great extent. They don't want to do this because it's all about money. But if you were to compare, look at the people that are in these institutions now, these county and private mental health facilities, and see how many visits they get from family or other members, how often they go to off grounds. I'm sure the majority of them get very few visits. In the correctional system, they would be, if they do the right crime, a non-victim crime, they would be put to minimum security where they would probably have off-ground trips regularly, great deal of freedom, healthy food. What they get in prisons compared to what they get in elder care is just doesn't compare.
Okay, let's get a response. Peter.
Yeah, with all due respect, I disagree with that. It's the, you know, that's the type of criminalization of mental illness that we've been learning that we need to, you know, not put people in correctional facilities because of mental illnesses. I mean, there's, you know, right now I think that some of the studies has been that 70% of those incarcerated, you know, had a mental illness, and those mental illnesses have greatly been undiagnosed until somebody's gotten into the correctional services. I think we need to spend the money to have community mental health programs early on so people avoid committing crimes that are due to behavioral issues with not getting quality treatment. You end up with a mental illness diagnosis in the correctional system. Unfortunately, if you could, you know, the schools were better at diagnosing mental illnesses and not sending, you know, children to suspension where they end up in juvenile and then they get, you know, end up being on the streets and get doing a crime and then they're in prison and then they say, oh, you know, your child has bipolar disorder. If we were able to diagnose that earlier and get them into community treatments, you know, I think we could avoid the trend of putting people in prison that have a mental illness. I mean, it's a medical condition. I understand people wanting to feel they get better care there. It's because our prisons are funded better than our community mental health programs
mm-hmm.
are funded.
Yeah, I think that was part of James' point, too. Here's an email that's come in. Could you please address the new parity mental health laws and Badger Care Plus's lack of mental health coverage, as well as nationalized health care?
Yeah, I can address that to a limited degree. Mental health parity, you know, took place federally last year, requiring that insurance companies that offer mental health coverage have to cover mental health at the same level that they cover any physical medical condition. This would mean, you know, prior to that, there is a $7,000, you know, cap. And so if you brought your child in and that $7,000, as we know now, runs out in 3 days at inpatient, and then it would be out of pocket. And so it was recognized that this is, you know, discriminatory for mental illnesses. So that change had been made at the federal level. Unfortunately, that was only for employers. I believe, you know, if you had to have, you know, if it was employee insurance, it was 25 employees or more. But we recently had a state mental health and substance use parity bill passed that also includes employers that have insurance that cover mental health under 25 employees. employees, which is a great success for the state of Wisconsin. That doesn't go into effect until, I believe, the first of this year, of 2011, but I could be wrong about that.
Jessica in Wind Lake. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. Hi, I wanted to thank the author from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for opening people's eyes. I think that in the long run, or really what she's done is open our eyes just a slit to what's going on in our mental health system. I believe that neglect is a statewide issue, that our elderly and our mentally ill are treated worse, and it is hidden worse than animals in the humane society. And I think there would be a huge outcry if animals in the humane society were dying of bed sores, such as the man in Burlington who died of bed sores at Mount Carmel a couple of years ago. I used to work at a nursing home in Brookfield, a very fancy, ritzy place run by a Fortune 500 company that would intentionally understaff after dinner time, after, you know, family members wouldn't come to visit anymore. There was one night where I took care of 40 people.
Oh, my gosh.
Myself. And I called the state and reported it. They never bothered to investigate. The state announces all of their visits to nursing homes. So you can see a nursing home be fully staffed when the state announces that they're going to be that they're going to visit. But yet when it comes to daycares with children, the state does not announce their visits. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that I have a friend who is very seriously mentally ill with bipolar, type 2. It was very obvious what was wrong with her because she was cutting herself and trying to commit suicide, and this is in Racine County. Now, in Racine County, they have tried to sweep her under the rug so many times. They have, you know, they have taken away her children, things of that nature, and put them in a house with a convicted felon who possesses guns because they didn't do a background check on the people who they placed these children with. But my friend who had cut herself within 24 hours of her cutting herself and being in the hospital, and this was St. Luke's in Racine, they tried to discharge her. And I was under the impression that if you are of danger to yourself, aren't you supposed to be legally under supervision in a mental hospital for, I believe it's 72 hours, or is it 48 hours?
Thanks, Jessica, for your call. Jessica points to cases that indicate, and I think that this is probably a truth, that we have as a society a very difficult time taking care of the most vulnerable among us. We just want to brush this under. We don't give the resources that are necessary to really helping a substantial number of people. I mean, most of us suffer from some kind of mental illness during our lifetimes. You know, and she's talking about the elderly, too, how we just don't care very much.
Yeah, I agreed with that. I mean, I don't, you know, sometimes I don't know, you know, if the answer is because we don't, you know, educate ourselves enough about these care issues, but, you know, the caller was definitely accurate, you know, with people, if this was going on with animals, you know.
Right.
You see the commercials all the time where they show individual or animals that have gone through abuse, neglect, and it's, you know, people are able to identify with that, but, you know, there are senior citizens, people with mental illness, people with developmental disabilities that, you know, are in systems where they're not receiving adequate care that we wouldn't accept for, you know, anybody. I mean, it's issues, of course, of oversight, but it's also issues of, as a community and society, readdressing our, you know, value for human life and how we do it. I mean, is it appropriate that we house our seniors in big, large nursing homes, or should we, you know, be looking to provide care for them in their home and in the community where they're still a part of their, you know, families, and they're able to pass on knowledge as an elder in their community. And we haven't, you know, where there's movements to do that, But we haven't done that for a long time in this country, where we've recognized the value of, you know, the humans that we live with. And, you know, if it's why, you know, it, I think, you know, we talk about this issues going on, and, you know, we need more funding for community mental health. You know, when individuals are violent and commit crimes, we're not asking that they stay in the community. There's obviously, you know, individuals need to go. You know, we don't want to be soft on crime and say that they have, because they have a mental illness, they shouldn't, you know, have any consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But getting better community mental health services early on that can prevent some of that criminal behavior that comes out of not having good care. And same with senior citizens. I mean, we're very quick to, you know, say, oh, this person can't live in our community. And then when they're behind closed doors and there's staffing issues and budget issues, you know, it gets very difficult to have.
Right. And on that note, we have to say goodbye. Thanks, Peter. Peter Hopeful, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness for Greater Milwaukee. We also thank Meg Kissinger, who, along with Steve Schultz, wrote a very stirring series of articles starting Sunday on the Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex. We'll return following the news.